So let's talk about RET rearrangements. And Mark, maybe you can present your 78-year-old lady.
Yeah, so again, we do multiplex testing, and we are able to find abnormalities in all the relevant genes. We do have a clinical trial for folks with RET rearrangements as well. As it turned out, this patient had multiplex testing sent, but this patient was interested in an immune therapy trial. So she went on a clinical trial of NPDL 8-3-2-8-0-3-2-8-0-3-2-8-0-8-0.
It's IPDL1 agent?
It's an anti-PDL1 agent. And she did not respond, actually. And then in the course of that clinical trial, her RET result came back. And she was started on cabozantinib. And since then, she has had, officially she's had stable disease, but with a very excellent tolerability and living an essentially normal life. There is a broader experience within that clinical trial where there are a lot of objective remissions. There's also reports of responses with fendetinib and reports of responses with sunitinib, actually, as well.
And these are durable responses?
They are. A lot of people, I think like many of the experiences here, some people, you know, progress right through it. Some people have stable disease. Some people have long, durable responses with these targeted agents. And that's our conundrum nowadays. You know, how do we figure that out?
And what's the incidence of RET rearrangements?
It's interesting. I'm going through some of the data for a national group that many of us here in the room are part of. It turns out we see more RET than we do see ROS1. Actually, in our little group, it's almost three times as many RET rearrangements as ROS1 rearrangements. So it's rare, but it's there. And you find it in the next-gen testing. And it's actionable either on a clinical trial or in some of the available drugs that are out there.